If you like this podcast and other Daily Thunder content, please consider supporting us on our Patreon page. For just $5 a month, you get access to our morning roundups of Thunder news, notes, and commentary. It all gets sent to your email automatically, along with our jam-packed weekend edition newsletter that has exclusive and early release content. For $6 or more a month, you qualify for things like free t-shirts, mugs, hoodies, and special live event passes. For more information, visit patreon.com/dailythunder. Thank you for listening to this podcast and for supporting Daily Thunder.
Welcome back to the Daily Thunder podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Woods. I am joined tonight by my usual compatriots, Brandon Rabar, Daily Thunder beat writer, and Spencer Davis, managing editor of Daily Thunder. Guys, how are you?
Doing great.
Yeah. I'm doing really, really well. Thank you for asking. Ryan, how are you doing? I never ask you.
Doing great. It is late in the evening, but Team USA is currently playing the gold medal game. So that'll probably give away like when we're recording this. But also today, it was made official. The max extension for Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. And I figured that would be the best place to start. Pretty significant day. Significant signing, obviously. Sorry, Toronto fans. You didn't get him for the fourth pick. Turns out Oklahoma City gave him all the money they could give him. But those rumors were so adorable.
Ryan, I thought they didn't want to pay him. Is that not right?
Yeah. I don't know if that was a shot at me because I have brought up.
Oh, it was not
him
a shot
being
at
traded.
You.
But
it was
yeah,
not a shot at you.
it's wild. You would think teams that pay their best player. It's an amazing concept. A huge milestone. I would say we will look back on this signing like we did. I think like we did the. The early rookie extensions for Russ and for Kevin. Those were big days. They signaled huge commitment to young players that had obviously succeeded and were developing well past their projections. So I think they see that same arc in Shai. So really, really exciting.
Go ahead, Brandon.
Oh no, go ahead.
Well, I was ref when I said they didn't want to pay him. I was making fun of some of the reports out there or whatever. Rumors is probably more accurate than reports. Just people sort of speculating that the Thunder wanted to move on from Shai or for some reason didn't want to keep him, and it had anything to do with money, which was always bogus in my opinion. And yeah, I mean this contract, and I think Ryan in our chat the other night you called it out, it's very similar to the deal that Kevin Durant signed, in that there is no, and maybe Russell Westbrook, I don't remember, but for sure Durant, where there's no fifth year option, there's no player option, it's just a full 5 years. So Shai is now under team control in Oklahoma City for the next 6 years, and it's obviously just a massive deal.
Yeah. The first thing, the no player option for the final year is such a cool, thing from Shai to show his commitment to OKC. I think in this modern NBA where superstars and even young superstars were seeing, on their first max extension or wanting to hop to other places, the cool places with the beaches and the nightlife and stuff like that. Shai committing to OKC for the full 5 years, he's gonna be here for another 6 years, is big time. And giving him this money is no brainer. If anybody's wondering, is he worth a max extension? Yes. When you look at his trajectory, when you look at his season last season and the numbers he was putting up, they were elite numbers. They were all-star numbers. I will still say it. He should have made the all-star game based on his numbers. And when he plays, they were almost a 500 team, regardless of the talent surrounding him, all the rookies and sophomores and undrafted guys, journeyman guys, the lack of spacing, the lack of unassisted points. He still put up some of the best numbers in the league last year. His efficiency was off the charts. It's a no-brainer signing from OKC's point of view. And the biggest thing about a rebuild is finding a couple of cornerstone franchise guys, young guys, to build your team around. That's why it was never making any sense to anyone that follows the Thunder that the Thunder would trade Shea, because he is a cornerstone. And the Thunder have one of those locked down now. Now they just need one more guy, and this thing is really going.
So to zoom out a little bit, post Durant, and I'm kind of saying all this through the lens of Sam Presti, just the journey and the job he's done. Durant leaves, and like a month later, Russ signs an extension. That was the like mini parade, the Russell Westbrook day, him being asked, does it sting that he went to even more that he went to Golden State, and Russ said, sting for who? Then to the trade for Paul George, and then the re-signing of Paul George, another Westbrook extension. A lot of stuff happened, and after each one, it was like, I'll speak for me. Is this the time we can actually exhale as a fan base post Durant? Is this when we can stop worrying about like the future of the team? And it really wasn't like they were kind of stopgap moments. They were important in that time, but looking back, like they were a bit more temporary than they felt in the moment. This feels like a true like reset and exhale. Like they have their guy, and everything going forward is to enhance what Shea does well and take advantage of the fact that he's such a versatile player that you can, I mean, just such an easy player to build around because he does everything so well.
Yeah, no, I think you're exactly right. I think that honestly, that's a great perspective because like you said, you know, once KD left, yes, Russ stayed. It was amazing. There were some incredible years, the MVP years. It was so much fun to have PG here and he re-signed and the OK3 with Carmelo and all those days. And then the transition year when you had CP3 and making it to the playoffs when nobody expected. But like you said, those were each kind of like stopgaps. And it's kind of like every offseason is like, oh, what's next? Oh, is this guy going to stay? Oh, he's going to sign an extension. Having a guy that just turned 23 last month and put up the numbers that Shea put up and is guaranteed to be here for the next 6 years. Like you said, this is now stability moving forward for OKC. There's a true plan. You see it. You see what's happening. And it is the reset. And, you know, now they can build around, like you said, a guy that's so versatile. You know, if you have a point guard that's 6'2 and he's great, that's cool. But you know that you need a 2, 3, 4 and a 5. Mm-hmm. If you have a 5 to build around, you know you need a 1, 2, 3 and a 4. But when you have a 6'6 point guard, combo guard, small forward, he can play 1 through 3. So he's so easy to build around. That's why you don't have to worry about, oh, are they going to draft this position? Oh, they need to get this position when you're building around Shea. Right now, you just take best talent because your franchise cornerstone right now can play 3 different positions. So just pick the best talent and build around it.
Yeah, I think that when you look at the next 6 years of this deal, this gives the Thunder a chance to build slowly and to continue like this patient approach that I think we all know Presti wants to take and the ownership wants to take. And they have, you know, they have the ability now to, even if they're bad for the next 2 years, let's say they finish in the bottom 7 of lottery odds or, you know, reverse standings, however you want to look at it, for the next 2 years, as long as they're showing incremental progress and it feels like within that building that they are, you know, mounting towards something, Shea's going to be happy, right? Like, even if he's in year five and they're, you know, they're not making a playoff push yet, it's going to be all right because everybody in that building knows where things are headed. And having Shea locked up for that for so long is the only thing that, you know, makes that possible.
I remember when Durant, I think it was coming up on the coming up on his free agency in 2016, he talked about almost like a regret for not, he talked about, you know, being naive, not pushing for a player option in that fifth year. And to see it, to see Shea, you know, commit to the full five and not have that player option, I'll be honest, it really surprised me.
It did to me too. Yeah.
It's a great thing. It's exciting. It's definitely team beneficial, but I was pretty surprised at that. Did that surprise you, Brandon?
Yeah, I did. Only because, like I said, it's kind of the trendy thing now to have the player option, and with so much movement. And then, you know, I've said since the beginning, like, Shea is smart. He's mature. He gets it. I don't think that he's, you know, looking to get out of OKC because the rebuilding. I think he understands. But still, you know, he's a 23-year-old guy that's on a superstar trajectory. It would have made sense to have the player option, just to have it, just to have that option. I mean, it's literally what it's called. Just so you keep your options open. And so for him to not include that, I mean, it's such a commitment to OKC. It's big time. And if you want to look from it, you know, the kind of a more pessimistic point of view or a cynical point of view and say, hey, you know, these guys, he could change his mind next year and want to get out of here. Okay. Well, him still denying that player option for last year is still better for OKC because it gives the contract more value. So if the contract is traded, it holds more value in a trade. So it's still a win, him not including that option.
Yeah. I had a similar thought. Just the fact that, you know, the Thunder have shown that they're willing to trade star players. Like, if this doesn't work out, like, let's say Poku and Giddey and whoever they take next year, like, none of those guys become NBA starters long term. And, you know, Shea looks up in 3 years and says, hey, I kind of want to get out of here. He knows that the Thunder will probably oblige, right? And like that, at that point, it's also probably best for the Thunder to reload again, as depressing as that would be. So, like, I think that Shea knows, one, if as far out as he can push that option, or, you know, the end of this contract, the better, because it's, you know, it's less of a distraction for his free agency or whatever. But also, he knows that if he needs an eject button, he doesn't necessarily need to hit free agency to get out. Like, he could probably end up getting traded if he really wanted to, with 2 years left on that deal.
If there's a franchise that doesn't want to deal with the blowback of unhappy players, I think we've seen Sam Presti kind of do whatever is needed to not have to deal with that, especially during a season. Like, clean it up in the off season, do what you've got to do. But yeah, I agree with you, Spencer. And it seems like Shea, like, everything he's put out, and obviously this is no surprise, this is what these guys do, this is what these guys hire people to help them do. But like, when this signing went down, it seemed like everything coming from Shea was like just excitement and just, I don't know. He seems committed, and he's always, like, since day one, he's felt like such a Thunder guy. And that's awesome. It's really, really, really exciting. He's like, I think we all thought he deserved to be an All-Star last year, and,
for sure,
we'll see what happens this year. Like, is the team going to be, you know, so bad that, you know, he doesn't even get to be a part of that conversation with better numbers? Like, I could totally see him scoring 30, like averaging 30 by the time we get to, you know, to the All-Star break. And we'll see if he can be a part of that conversation. But yeah, he's phenomenal. And he's going to be in Oklahoma City for, at minimum, the next 6 years, unless Oklahoma City deems it's time to trade him. So that is some major offseason news that I think we all expected, especially after the draft, that they were going to get Shea locked up for as long as they could. So I think just that alone makes this offseason a big win, like a really, really big win to get that deal done, specifically with the full 5-year commitment, I think is a huge win. And then you add on top of that, a successful draft. Like I we haven't really talked about it since that night, but like the further we get away from it, it feels like such a successful night for Oklahoma City. I think, yes, you can, you know, make your bones with the decision on trading the 16th pick, but I don't think there's any denying the potential value of what they did. And then to get the two players that they got, I think they've had a very productive offseason, and most importantly, what they've done is set themselves up, and we'll get into another critical move here in just a moment, but they have set themselves up to where they are in complete control of their 2022 first round pick. And that is super important. And Spencer, why don't you take us into the move that really set that up?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great way of putting it, that they're going to tank now. And I think we all expected that. But yeah, in control of the Thunder's own, of their own pick, I think is a very eloquent way of saying that they're going to try to lose 65 games this year. And that's because, yeah, I mean, and you're, of course, referencing the Kemba Walker buyout, which a lot of people, I saw a lot of tweets, you know, from people who are upset about this. And I kind of get it from the perspective of expectations, right? Like, I think Thunder fans were expecting to get something positive value out of Kemba Walker, because that's what all the rumors were for a week before the draft, right? Like, everybody, it was coming from a lot of different areas that the Thunder thought they had a deal for Kemba Walker. And it turned out that there was just no market for him. I mean, there was no, you know, Chicago ended up getting their guy. New Orleans ended up going in a different direction. The Knicks realized that they could just get him through a buyout. Like, they decided to pay Alec Burks and Nerlens Noel instead of giving the Thunder like a second round pick or something. So it's fine. The Thunder get positive value out of this, because now Trey Mann can play 26 minutes a night, or, you know, Tam Aladon can play 20 minutes a night, whatever it's going to be. Like, you're going to get, I mean, how many teenagers are going to be playing 20 minutes a night on this team? Mm-hmm. There's at least 4 or 5. I think Jeremiah Robinson Earl is older, but that's another rookie that's going to get a bunch of minutes. I think Aaron Wiggins is probably going to be in the G League. But I mean, at some point in the year, you're going to get the Charlie Browns or the Jalen Hordes of the world. Like, those guys are going to be playing, like maybe Josh Hall again. You know, you're going to get that, you know, those types of players are going to be playing big minutes for the Thunder at some point this season, I think, maybe after the All-Star break. And yeah, I mean, you don't have a guy like an Al Horford to come in and win you 4 extra games in the first half of the year. So I think that, you know, this accomplishes a lot of different things, even if they didn't get like a positive draft asset for Kemba Walker.
Brandon, it's really down to your boy, Mike Muscala.
The only bet left. I mean, he's going to be the only one who's not in his 20s by the time the season is coming around. Look, the Kemba deal makes complete sense. They already got 2 first round picks for taking on Kemba's contract, because they took the 16th pick that they got for him, flipped it into 2 future firsts, which I do think are going to convey, because the two teams that kind of control those picks, the Pistons and the Wizards, one of them has Cade Cunningham and Jeremy Grant and Isaiah Stewart, and they want to get better. And then the other one has Bradley Beal and Spencer Dinwiddie, and they want to keep Beal happy. I think those picks will absolutely convey to 2 first round picks. So, to me, you already got positive value from Kemba Walker. And you got to think, if they didn't trade him, they'd still have Al Horford. All they did was add, basically, I did all the math. If you look at what Kemba's giving back with the buyout, they basically come even for this coming season. And then next season, they add about $15 million. So you bought 2 first-round draft picks for $15 million. That's an absolute slam dunk win of a trade. And like you guys said, now it opens up all these development minutes for the young guys, and now it positions them for a better draft pick. And I think that this, you know, I don't think that they're going to intentionally tank like they did last year. You know, as far as, you know, when they step on the court, they want to win. Even last year, they want to win. We saw that with the, you know, the Clippers game. They're not going to say, okay, go out and miss your shots, make bad passes. I mean, they're coaching to win, they're playing to win. But as far as like roster moves and things like that, they'll put out their best guys. And the thing is, though, now they won't have an Al Horford or a Kemba Walker or a George Hill and those kind of guys. It's going to be all the young guys. And if they win, it's truly going to be on the backs of the young players, the core players that'll be here. And if you win like that, you live with that. You don't want to win and ruin your, you know, draft position. You don't want to go from Evan Mobley to, you know, out of the top five because Al Horford or George Hill. If you do it because of Lou Dort or Shai Gilgeous-Alexander or Josh Giddey, okay.
Right. It does remind me a little bit of that scene in Moneyball where Jonah Hill's talking to Brad Pitt about like teams at this point of the year, they're trying to buy wins and they should be trying to buy runs. And
yes,
it reminds me a bit of like how much is it worth to the Thunder organization to buy losses at this point? Like that is essentially what you're saying is like getting we will eat this money in order, if it means moving up 6, 7, 8 spots in terms of lottery odds. And I think that is their main focus right now at this point. And I know there's a lot of Thunder fans that probably don't want to hear us start talking about the 2022 draft when we just ended this past one, but their main focus is their first round pick next year. And how can we develop these young guys and right alongside that value that pick with everything. And getting a guy like Kemba, a veteran that can really help you win games, especially close games late, for having him, you know, not having to deal with like, do we play him? Do we sit him? Do we just shut him down? It may be a bad look. Another thing that we talked about is Oklahoma City doesn't want to do that. That was really uncomfortable last year with Horford. It was uncomfortable with Shai. Doing that, like moving Kemba along now, just makes the most sense for all parties, and for the Thunder specifically, it really enhances that pick and what it could potentially be.
Right. And yeah. another positive, you do add cap space, and the Thunder are very interested in taking on bad contracts for more assets. And, you know, this isn't going to be like an unlimited deal where they keep doing this. There's only another year or two where they can do this. So it's accumulate as many assets as possible right now. So when they are ready to push the chips in and they start trading draft picks away for stars, disgruntled guys, things like that, and they start eating up their cap space by paying guys like Shai and paying, you know, let's say a John Collins that becomes a restricted free agent, and they throw some money at them. So it's build up as much capital right now so you have it in the bank for when you start contending. You know, you'll still have some things. They're going to have so many assets. You know, in the first era when they had KD and Russ and all that, you know, they didn't have many assets to go out and do more things. They couldn't add to it. But this next era, when they have Shai and hopefully, you know, Giddey or next year's guy, whether it's Chet Holmgren or whatever, when these guys are kind of becoming stars, they'll still have all these assets, these draft picks they can throw at and add to this team. So it's a great plan. You just, you know, it requires patience on the front office's side, with the team side, the fan side. It just requires some patience. But I think it is a great plan that's being executed perfectly so far.
Yeah, we should also mention the Derek Favors trade, right? Like that, you mentioned the Thunder basically bought 2 first round picks for $15 million. They basically bought another top 10 protected pick from Utah for $20 million total, $10 million this year, $10 million the following year, and that's an interesting pick too because I'm not confident at all that Donovan Mitchell is going to be with the Jazz in 2024. But even if he is, like if that pick's in the late teens, early 20s, like that's definitely worth it, and that's, you know, that's just more of what you're talking about. But, you know, back to what Ryan was saying earlier too, like the Thunder's most valuable assets, when you consider everything, maybe other than Shai, is their own first round pick for sure next year. And I would argue 2023 as well. Like those are the two of everything they have, including all their Clippers picks and their Rockets stuff. Like the two most valuable assets the Thunder have are the ones that they control over the next 2 years. And they're going to be playing a lot of young guys. Like, even if Shea scores 30 points a game on 60% true shooting percentage next year, which is on the table, it would be another huge leap if he did that. The Thunder is still going to be pretty bad, right? Like, they're playing a lot of young guys, and Muscala and Derek Favors are the only vets on the team, really. Kenrich Williams, maybe you could throw in there as well, but like, I don't even know that either of those, like Muscala and Favors, I don't even think I want those guys starting, right? Like, I for sure don't want Favors starting. Maybe Muscala, just because he can space the floor, but I would rather Isaiah Roby or even Darius Bazley start at the five over Derek Favors.
Amen.
I don't know how you guys feel about
that. I totally agree with you. I've been, you know, the more I've thought about it, I just hope they start Bazley. I don't know. I would rather see Poku. Pokuševski get more minutes than Bazley, which means I think Bazley should play more at the five. You know, yeah. Obviously, unless Poku ends up putting on like 30 pounds, then then we'll see. But obviously, like I do think Bazley at the five makes a ton of sense, especially over a guy like Favors.
I don't know that he's ever going to be like a long term five, just because he's not really going to be a vertical rim protector, right? But yeah, I mean, get him playing time.
Sounds like, great for next year.
Yeah, I mean, this is like, and by the way, I mean, Poku, I guess, could be your weak side rim protector because his arms are so long. But that's it's going to be a while before his defensive IQ is at a point where he can do that. And he sure as hell isn't guarding Joel Embiid and Nikola Jokic and those guys. So it's going to be matchup dependent a little bit. But I do want Poku and Giddey to both start, right? Like I think Poku's the four in that situation most nights.
Yeah. Yeah. Brandon, yeah. Do you like that? Giddey, Poku, Dort, Shea, and then fill in the blank at the five starting lineup.
Yeah. So I've played with this a lot. Actually, the new journal I'm writing is kind of playing with rotations for the Thunder. And absolutely, I want Shea, Dort, Giddey, and Poku to start. Those are kind of the four high upside, exciting players. I would argue also Trey Mann. If I were picking my five favorite like upside guys, it'd be those four and Trey Mann. But you can't start Trey Mann with it, then it gets too small. But I would say those four guys. And then, yeah, I mean, Favors makes sense from a vet point of view. Like, okay, you know, let's see what these guys look like. Because you want them to be able to be functional. Like, you know, you want, you know, a smart presence out there with the young guys to see how things are going to be set up. Because you're implementing, you know, plays and strategy and habits right now. So to me, you don't want to get like too crazy as far as, you know, like, yeah, we're interested in not being good. So just throw anybody out there. At the same time, I get, you know, Bazley as a small ball at five. I floated that. I'd kind of prefer it on the bench. But my kind of wild card is Jeremiah Robinson Earl. He's 6'9", but he's a little bit thicker, stronger, more powerful, kind of grit and grind type of guy, fundamentals. You know, he's not typical size for a center, but he's kind of a power forward slash center. Now, obviously, I don't think that you take your second round pick and make him your starting center right away, but maybe down the line, I could see him right now being the backup center. Because it might be a deal, again, where Mike Muscala doesn't play too much except for kind of spare minutes. He's kind of the vet locker room guy. I do think Favors will end up starting. But as far as, like, my fun lineup, like, what I'd like to see because of upside and potential and seeing the young guys play, yeah, I would go SGA, Dort, Giddey, Poku. And then I would probably go Jeremiah Robinson Earl, but sure, throw in Bazley as a small ball five. I'm fine with that.
Would you be
what about
cool
if Roby?
Yeah,
Roby would be fine. Okay, so yeah, no, I'm glad you brought up Roby. He again, I feel like he's a four. I know that he played five, and then you get some mismatches because he can shoot. But I still just feel like he's not the body of a five. Like I think that you're just kind of you give up so much at the rim. There's real no rim protection. So I feel like if you want to put these guys in like real game experiences, like let's try to win and play how we're gonna play. I feel like you need to put a serviceable five in there. And I just don't feel like Roby and Bazley have the bodies where they can have a, you know, true rim protection. So I feel like you're putting fours into fives, you know, to, and I don't think that they'll go as far as to be, you know, purposely bad that much. Like, hey, here's how we can really lose. Let's put everybody in April. Like 190 pounds in the center.
Well, if we need rim protection, we can just start Garuba. Oh, wait, we didn't take it. Forgot about that. My bad.
No, I mean, I don't know that, like, Favors is – he's not necessarily a rim protector either, though, is he?
No.
Like,
right.
I mean, he's – I don't know. Like, that is – and he doesn't shoot anywhere. Like, I would be all right if he pulled an Ariza personally and just – or Iggy, whatever, whoever you want to stick with that. Like, if he never shoots up for the Thunder, I won't be disappointed just because – there's other young guys. Like, I know Roby is more of a four, but he can stretch the floor. Like, he will at least shoot that shot. And yeah, he's athletic enough to sort of contest. Like, are you going to get obliterated by Jokic? Yeah, you are. But so is almost every other center in the league. So, I have basically no interest in seeing Derek Favors. And I think you're right, Brandon. It's probably going to happen, but I'm going to complain about it until it stops.
I mean, I like the idea of a stretch five, because I think that's ultimately where the Thunder are going to go. Like, yes, if you look at their, you know, their drafting and their recent, you know, guys are bringing in, they're going to pick a five that can stretch the floor. So I do want to see that with Shea. I'd love to see Shea with more space. And, you know, I think Giddey's a better shooter than he's been given credit for. Hopefully Poku, you know, continues to improve and Dort continues to improve. But I do want to see Shea and Giddey with some space. So I would like to see a stretch five. So I would be okay with it. I just, you know, when I'm thinking about what I think the Thunder will do, I don't think that's exactly what the Thunder will do. You know, but if you put Muscala out there in some spot minutes, he stretches the floor. But I'm telling you, JRE, he's kind of my wild card here for playing a lot of minutes at the five. So, yeah, but I do ultimately want to see the young guys play all the minutes more than anything. And I'll tell you what, I think that Derek Favors has more value than like an Ariza, you know, these kind of guys. I think that he can still play. And, you know, would Brooklyn swap DeAndre Jordan for Derek Favors right now and include a sweetener? I think that they would. I think that he has some value. I think that the Jazz just needed to shed some salary and he didn't make any sense for them anymore. And nobody else could take on that salary. But I don't think that means that Derek Favors has zero value anymore.
Do you think there's a chance that Bazley starts over Poku?
I do. When I was playing with all the lineups, like I said, I'm in the middle of writing this for Daily Thunder, and it's so tough. You want to pencil in Shea and Dort, but those are the only two that you can say for sure. You want to hope that when you select Josh Giddey at number six overall, and he's such a big part of the future, that you want him to start immediately. But do they start Poku and Bazley and not Giddey? Or do they give it to Bazley and not Poku based on the fact that Bazley started to begin the season and Poku didn't? I don't know. But I think if you're looking at upside and potential, you got to start both Poku and Giddey over Bazley at this point.
I would personally be shocked if Bazley is like a regular starter over Poku. Like, Bazley was the only guy on this team that I don't want to say he failed because that's too strong, but like he definitely fell below expectations. Whereas everybody else on the team last year surpassed expectations by a pretty considerable margin. I mean, if you go up and down, especially, you know, the long-term guys on this team. Mm-hmm.
Poku's the wrong guy. Maybe it's Giddey. Maybe we're assuming that Giddey will start and that could be wrong.
I want to wait until – I mean, if Giddey lights up Summer League, I definitely think he'll start. And I do think he's going to have a good Summer League because I think the Australian League is tougher competition, and he was regularly putting up triple-doubles in the Australian League.
I agree with you, Spencer. I think that I'm looking forward to Giddey and Summer League. I think he's going to tear it up because, like you said, you know, he's not coming from college. That Australian League, it's legit. I mean, he's played against grown men. I don't think that this is going to be too big of a stage for him. I think he's going to come in and be comfortable right away. But like you guys said, that's my wonder as well. Will Giddey actually come off the bench, even though he was the sixth overall pick, just because Poku and Bazley did start to finish the season last year. So they go with the young incumbents and then make, Giddy earn his way into the starting lineup. That could happen. I don't think any of us want to see that, but I think it can happen. And if it does happen, Giddy's still going to be playing a ton of minutes.
Yeah. I think the case for Giddy coming off the bench is if the Thunder want to play him at backup point guard, you know, a fair amount. I think you could make that case. Like, they have other guys that can play that role, but maybe they want to see what Giddy is like there. So that would be the only way that would make sense to me, is if, like, you're going to have him playing of his 26 minutes a night, if you want 18 of them to be as a point guard, then maybe you bring him off the bench.
Another fun thing about this season is if they continue with maybe, you know, on back-to-backs, they say Shea's not going to play the second night. Obviously Shea is such a treat to watch, but let's say he sits. Now Giddy and Mann get the ball. And yeah, that is so fun. Like, that is going to be a blast to watch Giddy as the main guy. Cause I mean, that is his experience. Like, throwing him in a lineup with a guy like Shea will be brand new. And so that'll be a lot of fun to watch him run the show, with Dort, with Poku, with these other guys. So that'll be a lot of fun as well.
Yeah, Giddy, I want the ball in his hands as much as possible, but you want the ball in Shea's hands as much as possible too. But I think it's a good problem to have. You know, Shea needed help last year. He was the creator of all offense. Giddy is a legit ball handler, playmaker, those type of things. I think they'll figure it out. I'm not sure exactly what the fit is going to be yet and how much each of them is going to have the ball. But I want, you know, it's interesting because the Thunder are selecting all these guys who can handle the ball. Poku, Bazley, Tao, Trey Mann. Giddy and Shake could be special as a 1-2 punch. So you want the ball in their hands as much as possible. I will say, though, credit to Ryan Woods. He was on Trey Mann before both Spencer and I were, or the rest of, you know, Thunder fandom. You know, I kind of didn't give him much thought because he was kind of the lower end of all those guards when you looked at mocks. So I kind of, you know, when I did all my research, I did a ridiculous amount of draft research. But I'll be honest, when I came to Trey Mann and guys like that, I kind of did like a peripheral, you know, kind of dive. I was like, okay, you know, he's solid. He's a good scorer. He's a good shooter. But I didn't really deep dive into him. So now after the Thunder drafted him, I did a deep dive. And I'm telling you, Ryan, you were right before everybody else was when it comes to Trey Mann. He could be special. And it's not just drinking the Kool-Aid because they drafted him. I mean, when I looked, like, actually crunched his numbers and got into it and watched game film and kind of looked at context, man, he is one of the most skilled scorers and shooters in this entire draft.
I mean, yeah, I couldn't. If the Thunder hadn't taken him, I'm not sure I would have ever learned the difference between him and Trey Murphy.
That's right. I remember you asked me that first night. I was like, well, Trey Murphy's like 6 inches taller.
Yeah. No. But no, you mentioned he's 6'5", or 6'4", 6'5", whatever he is. Like, he grew between his freshman and sophomore years at Florida. And this is obviously pure speculation. But I'm betting Sam Presti knows whether or not that man's growth plates are closed or not, right? Like, I bet he knows.
He's probably not done.
I wouldn't go that far, but I think there's a chance that he grows another inch or so, or maybe his arms, you know, get a little bit longer. But no,
didn't he say something about that?
Somebody asked him if he was still growing, and he said something like, "I hope I am." Brandon, you were there. I just watched YouTube, so you can correct me if I have that wrong. But I think was sort of tongue in cheek saying, "I hope I'm still growing."
So Brandon, someone asked Trey Mann if he's done growing yet, and like, that's a real question. You asked Josh Giddy if he pooped.
Hey, and which one would most people say they enjoyed more, and which one got more views on social media, and which one has made its way into the fabric of NBA culture?
The fabric. So I seeping stand by my into question. The fabric.
Oh my gosh. No, I mean, the Trey Mann thing, like, he's just such an unbelievable pull-up shooter, right? Like, that is something that, like, is Deion Waiters, other than Kevin Durant, of course, like, is Deion Waiters the best pull-up shooter in Thunder history other than KD? And not like this, like, Trey Mann is going to be awesome at that. It's going to be a lot of fun.
I love, love that you brought up the Outwaiters.
Man, I my excitement for Trey Mann just got tempered so much.
So seriously, we talked a lot about Cam Thomas, and yeah, every single time I watched Cam Thomas, I went in with the thought, like, erase the Dion Waiters thing out of your head. Like, just give him a chance. Every time I watched him, everything looks like Dion Waiters. Like, yeah, everything is a fadeaway. Everything is a long two, or a really deep three. I think Cam Thomas will be fine, but like, that's kind of where I was with him. Was like, this guy looks just like Dion Waiters.
Well, here's the thing is, like, if Dion Waiters would have been picked 27th in the draft, everyone would have been talking about what a good career he had, but he got picked fourth.
Sure.
And like, I think Cam Thomas, I really like what Brooklyn did. I think it went under the radar. Like, they got Cam Thomas and De'Ron Sharp in the back end of the first round. That's obviously off topic, but no, I mean, I brought up Waiters to point out, like, the Thunder have never really had this type of player before. Not to say that, like, Trey Mann is anything like Dion Waiters, because I don't think he's going to be. I think he's going to be a much smarter player, much better shot selection, keep his habits on airplanes in check, hopefully. And, you know, we'll see how it goes. But, like, yeah, my point is that the Thunder have not had this archetype before, and it's a really fun type of player. So I'm excited to see it.
I have a schematic question for either of you, both of you. They're building a team with all of these creators and ball handlers. Is there a scenario where it leads to more one-on-one basketball, like where the ball moves around, but eventually it's just going to stop with one of these guys that is so used to being the creator. And when the ball comes to them, they then go they take their guy one-on-one. Like, is there a world where this looks a bit stagnant, maybe even early on?
No, I don't think so. I mean, to put it simply, when you look at what Mark Daigneault is preaching, it's all teamwork. It's all, you know, even Sam Presti and the rookie press conference introduction, he talked about, you know, teamwork, making each other better. Like, that has been like the catchphrase, like making others better, making their teammates better. So it's being preached nonstop, and they're taking in players who play that way. Like, Josh Giddey is definitely a pass-first guy. Like, that's what he's looking to do, is set other guys up. You know, then you look at Poku. He was brought in. Yeah, he's a shooter, scorer, hopefully. But he's supposed to be a playmaker for his size. Baisley, like, all these guys are supposed to be, you know, guys who set other guys up. That's kind of the new, you know, if the stereotype before was long, athletic defenders who can't shoot, now it's like 6'8". You know, wings, guards who pass and dribble and playmake for others. I mean, that's kind of what they're going for. So I think, given the talent they're bringing in, and given, you know, the way that they want to play basketball and preaching, I don't think it goes that way. Teo Maladon, you know, Trey Mann is probably the only guy who's kind of a shoot first, score guy. And even he, you know, I think his playmaking is a little bit underrated. He averaged over 3.5 assists last year for a pretty bad Florida team with not much else as far as talent goes. Probably a little bit like Shea. Shea should have had a lot more assists last year. He set others up really, really well. They just couldn't convert. So, no, I think that, you know, the vision is there. Now, will the talent match up to the vision? You know, hopefully. But I think this is a team that will be extremely different from the first era of ISO ball.
I think some of what I'm thinking, and this is like, this is a far less likely scenario that I'm voicing. I don't think this is going to happen, but my thought is that a lot of these guys have never, they just aren't used to moving without the ball. And I think with this collection of guys and the way that they want to play, it will require them to move without the ball a little more, because they're used to having it in their hands so much. And I do think there is a scenario where it turns into a lot of drive and kick, but it eventually just stalls with late in the shot clock with whoever it ends up with. That person is then going one-on-one, which they're accustomed to, which they're good at. But I do hope there's a little more like off-ball movement to get these guys like
really in a lot of space.
Yeah. I think that's where Giddy comes in. I don't, have you guys watched his pre-draft breakdown with Mike Schmitz where they like go through and break down tape?
Yes.
It's awesome to see, you know, and you know, you can kind of tell when guys can or have amazing basketball IQ and that kind of thing, but to just to have him talk through his reads on a bunch of these like no-look passes and just, you know, or cross court passes into the corner, like anytime something gets stagnant with Giddy, even if he's not necessarily starting the play, like let's say Shea does, you know, has a little pick and roll, drives right, kicks it out to Dort in the corner, and then Dort passes it back out to the wing and Giddy's there. Giddy's just going to be able to find an open shooter. Like I think that sort of type of play is going to happen a lot where, you know, Giddy's going to end up with the ball with 8 seconds left and he's going to be able to, divert his eyes, you know, divert the defense with his eyes and find an open shooter or an open big under the basket. Like, I think Giddy is kind of the piece that unlocks the thing that you're talking about here.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm pumped to see it, especially like short roll situations, like a Giddy screen for yeah. Shea, I think is super fun. Like everything that we talked about, like, cause early on it was Barnes all the way right at six. And the thought of him in that, for lack of a better term, Draymond role where he's just setting the screen and the guard is being trapped. What does that guy do? I think Giddy, I mean, that could be absolutely incredible.
That's the type of pass that Shea doesn't have yet. And it's because he's not necessarily a natural point guard. I mean, I think he's become that. Like he averaged 6 assists a game or close to it last year, whereas he was more of a 2 in his first 2 years of his career. I think he averaged exactly 3 assists a game. But he still does not have like the Trae Young, LaMelo Ball type of passes where he can just throw somebody open. And Giddy has that. And I think it's going to be really fun.
And I think you can reverse it, Brandon, like Shea setting screens for Giddy and catching that moving down the lane. Obviously this is going to require space where this is where a guy like playing Muscala with these guys just lets them do more stuff. But yeah, I think the possibilities between Giddy and Shea are kind of endless.
Yeah, it's funny because, you know, when you just look at it, you're like, okay, you got one guy who needs the ball because he's on the trajectory of being an elite scorer and he's the lead point guard. But then you got a guy who's always been his lead point guard for his team and he needs the ball to do what he does best, which is create and set others up and play make. So you wonder, how does that fit exactly? But I think it does. Thank you. Sorry, guys. I'm getting crumbled cookies at the same time. I can't wait anymore. My wife needed them. Okay. But I think that it does fit. I don't even know exactly what their answer is as far as how it fits. I just believe in the talent, and I believe in the unselfish nature of both guys. And I believe in, you know, kind of the vision. And I think that, you know, you see it with the Nets. You got Katie who needs the ball, Kyrie who needs the ball, and you got Harden who needs the ball. That's three dudes who need the ball. You saw it with Chris Paul and James Harden. And did they bump edge? Yeah, but I mean, they were really successful. When you got, you know, guys that need the ball, you got 48 minutes. It tends to kind of work itself out. You just kind of let the talent rise to the top. And I think that's what's going to happen with the Thunder.
Let's go to, we'll end with Summer League. Oklahoma City plays their first game on Sunday evening against Detroit. They released the official roster, I believe, yesterday, correct?
Did they?
No, they still.
Sorry. I saw a tweet of just a list of names, I should say,
yeah.
of guys that are confirmed. But it did include Giddy and Mann, which Presti's already mentioned that Pokuševski is not going to be playing in summer league, which is very surprising. But we will get to see Giddy and Mann. Will we see JRE down there?
Yeah, he's okay. So the basis of that tweet that you're talking about was because Trey Mann on his Instagram posted a video of those guys eating together. So everybody's kind of assuming that's going to be the summer league team, which makes sense. And yeah, Jeremiah Robinson Earl was sitting next to Josh Giddey. So yes, if that is correct and that is the summer league team, he will be there. And so is Aaron Wiggins as well.
Now, none of those guys have signed yet, right? Like that's a little bit weird too.
Yeah, we haven't, you know, we haven't got details on that yet. So it doesn't look like it. You know, the only rookies I've seen that actually signed were the Warriors rookies. And I think that's just because you got to wait 30 days after a rookie signs to trade them. So I think the Warriors like, Kuminga, come here. Moody, come here. Sign this ASAP. we need to trade you guys in 30 days. So they're the only ones I've seen who've signed so far.
I think Kuminga, as soon as he finished that crossover dunk in transition, they kind of pulled him back into a back hallway for a little ink on the paper. Real fast. He showed a lot of stuff in his first preseason game. Summer league game.
Yeah, and of course there's going to be knee-jerk reaction to that, and I get it, because you're like, oh, you're like, you see like one dunk, you're like, oh, no, how did this guy go to the Warriors?
Yeah.
And I get it, because we all kind of feel that way, but, you know, there's a reason why Sam Presti and the Thunder and then the Warriors front office and the Grizzlies front office, three of the teams from 6 to 10 all wanted Josh Giddey. That's who the Warriors were going to pick, and the Grizzlies were trying desperately to move up from 17 to 10 and then 10 to even higher to pick Giddey. So, you know, I trust those front offices.
And NBA fans, if you're mad that the Warriors got Jonathan Kuminga, don't come at Oklahoma City or anybody else except for Minnesota. Minnesota won like 8 games in the last like 2 weeks to really, really hurt their lottery odds and hand that pick to Golden State. So if you're looking for somebody to get mad at, it's Minnesota.
That's the truth. Now you're giving me flashbacks to the lottery. I'm still not over, and I'm not seeing like Rockets fans like talking about how their rebuild is going so perfectly and all the plan and
just OKC's
is going. I'm like, dude, you want a coin flip? If you didn't want a coin flip, you'd be sitting here with. I mean, it's.
They can win 10 coin flips. Tillman Fertitta is going to screw that up. Like, I'm not worried about the Rockets at all. Like, that is not going to work out one way. Like, Jalen Green may be an all-star, whatever. Like, if you're a Thunder fan, like, don't worry about the Rockets. That problem is going to take care of itself.
Every time I think about Tillman, I think of the 60-minute clock. Like, it's just a matter of
time. Yeah. Yeah, it's a ticking time bomb. The man wrote a book with his face on it that said "Shut up and listen." Like this man is not cut out for success in the NBA. Weren't there rumors that they were like trying to get Andre Drummond or something? Like this isn't going to go well. I don't like as far as other Thunder Summer League stuff. I mean, I assume do we think the four starters are the four rookies they took and Maledon? Because Maledon is playing.
Yeah, I mean, I hope so. Yeah, Maledone supposedly is going to be there and playing. Some Twitter investigators think that they saw him hiding behind one of the other players in that video. I would guess, I hope it's the four rookies and Maledone because those are the guys I think we're almost interested in seeing and that we're almost invested in. And it actually makes sense. You can start Maledone at the one, Giddey at the two, or I guess Mann at the two, Giddey at the three.
Yeah.
Actually, it gets a little funky because you got Wiggins. I mean, JRE can start at the five. So, yeah, that probably won't be the starters, actually.
Probably not, yeah, unless JRE is the center. Because Wiggins can kind of play. Wiggins is pretty big. Like, he could probably play a summer league four. I think he's like 6'6".
Yeah, he's 6'6".
He'd be small for it, but he can guard, you know, summer league fours, I think.
Do we have
a
young –
I wouldn't be surprised if they have man – come off the bench and kind of be the lead guy, kind of lead the bench unit maybe.
Yeah.
I'm excited about man.
Do we have a young, exciting wing that can like do a whole bunch of stuff that could play that four spot?
We should talk about why is Poku not on this team? Like, are they afraid of the content? Is that what it is? Like, do they just not want the bright lights of Las Vegas Summer
Spencer,
League?
Spencer, we've told you 100 times he's on an individual plan, and it's and it's going great. Thanks for asking.
I'm skeptical. I think that they. I don't think that the Thunder like that Poku is just prime NBA content, like podcast fodder, like on a national level. I think that terrifies them. And I could not agree more. Yeah, I think it absolutely scares the hell out of Sam Presti that Poku could throw a behind the back pass off the backboard. And like he now he's just a meme forever. And now his confidence for the first 2 months of the year is shot because he screwed something up.
Crazy.
He's not at the practice facility. He's not at the practice facility. He is underneath the practice facility.
I'm exaggerating a little bit, but I do think that the Thunder are very aware of the place that Poku holds in the NBA zeitgeist, and they want nothing to do with Summer League.
I mean, I think there's a lot of validity to what Spencer's saying, and I don't think it's out of nowhere. I think the Thunder have always been like that.
I'm going to have to disagree, disrespectfully disagree. No, I mean, you can't really, I mean, these guys are playing. I don't think that like putting guys in the summer league is some like national stage. I mean, he was starting in real NBA games.
Oh, and he was one of 15 games a night then though. Like nobody was paying attention. The Thunder lost 30 games in a row. Nobody, you know, and he was still getting talked about, but it was, the summer league is a different deal. Like there's only one or two games going on at a time. And like people are NBA Twitter is on top of that stuff. Like remember when Lonzo was at summer league, that was like Talen Horton Tucker was getting like, there were like odds if he was going to make the All-Star game last year because he was so good in summer.
Summer league is peak NBA Twitter because that's all that's watching. And like the entire league is there. And
what are you going to watch, baseball? Like,
and everyone's, I mean, this to Spencer's point, like everyone, like when the games end, that arena turns into a podcast studio. Like that's all people do. And it's a ton of fun, but it also leads, like if someone, there's just a lot of expectations, I think, for year two of Pokuševski. And if he were to go to and like, you know, have a couple Shaqton moments. Like it's, I don't think the team would like, I don't think Presti's here for that.
No, I mean, there's definitely like, it's definitely overreaction season when it comes to summer league. I completely agree with that, but no, I do believe that it's probably more, it's a simpler answer. It's just basically they probably have some momentum going with his weight training. I think that's the most important thing to them is kind of refining his shot and adding muscle and those kind of things. And they kind of have him in-house and probably just kind of want to keep that momentum going. Like they see positive results. So they probably feel like, you know, they can do more good by having him in-house and continuing that than letting him get away for a couple of weeks. That would be my guess as to why Poku's not. I think that they value him really, really highly. I think they're very, very high on him. And I think that when they're looking at, you know, the players, obviously you got Shea, then I think that Giddey and Poku are up next as far as potential goes. And I think they're going to try to, you know, squeeze out every ounce of potential. So I think that they want him to put on that weight and be, you know, kind of have him in-house to refine him. That's my guess. You guys could be right, but I'm going a different way on it.
I think it's both.
I think we can both be right.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. I also think that, like, he can lift weights in Las Vegas. Like, I think they have weight sets there. You know, it's only, like, a week. They play 4 games in 7 or 8 days. I think it's probably both. But also, you know, yeah, keeping distractions at a minimum. Like, the margin for Poku becoming a superstar at some point is so thin. And so, like, if they want to micromanage this, like, I'm thrilled that he was in Oklahoma City all summer. So if they mm-hmm. feel like micromanaging this offseason is the best chance that they have of getting Poku to reach whatever his ultimate ceiling is, then, like, have at it. But I want to come in with a conspiracy theory every once in a while. I think that's
no. Here. No, yours is a lot more fun. Mine's yeah. Pretty boring. Yours is way more.
Well, yours
fun.
Is probably like what Sam Presti would say if he was on this podcast. We asked
yours, Brandon. Yours sounds like you read it. Like somebody did someone send that to you?
Hold on, let me take my email. Let me get that statement yeah. again. Let me see if I did it verbatim. I've been trying to work on. I've been working on my lines.
If like yeah, could you read that back and we'll see if you can say it exactly the same? Then we'll know. Then we'll know. No,
but I do think that you know it's really disappointing. If you want to go another way, maybe they just don't want to. You know, maybe Sam Presti isn't into spoilers, and if he basically plays all the guys that he could at Summer League, it would basically be this Thunder team minus Shea and Favors. So maybe he just wants to avoid spoilers for this upcoming season because it would basically be the entire Thunder roster playing at Summer League because it's all a bunch of young guys.
Hide the scouting report for a little bit longer, like he's a college, right. A paranoid college football coach or something.
Right, exactly. Yeah, don't want to give him everything.
You know, we don't even know what the Thunder schedule is yet, which is crazy. Like I'm going to be in Oklahoma City for a wedding in December. I was like, oh, I wonder if the Thunder are playing that weekend. And I go to find the schedule. It's August 6th. We know Major League Baseball's schedule for next season, and the Thunder don't have a schedule for 2 months from now. It blows my mind, but that's, I digress.
We're doing it in honor of the 75th anniversary. We're doing everything like the first year of the NBA. You find out the night before. So
is that how it happens? I'm not aware.
I'm totally making that up.
It's like, we're going to
we've passed midnight Eastern. So anything goes.
The Thunder, the United States are trying to give this game away, by the way. I think they're going to win it, but they're trying their darndest to give it to France.
I tell you what, rooting for KD on the Team USA, it's kind of like rooting for Darth Vader when Palpatine is attacking Luke Skywalker. Like, yeah, I mean, I'm rooting for Darth Vader. I want him to win in this moment, but he's still Darth Vader. Like, that's kind of how I feel like rooting for KD on team. Like, I want him to win. I want him to do well because he's on Team USA. But, man, it's just tough to root for KD.
Let's end here. Russell Westbrook is now on the Los Angeles Lakers. So given what you just said, where does rooting for Russell Westbrook fall in that analogy?
I mean, it's easy for me to root for Russell Westbrook. I mean, after, you know, his tenure in OKC and the, you know, the connection between Russ and the city and the fans and the community and how much he meant to the team and, you know, all those things. I wish Russ nothing but success. And, you know, I've never been a Lakers guy, but now I will be rooting for Russ to win a ring. I couldn't really, it was hard to root for Russ with the Rockets. I rooted for him, but not the Rockets. And then the Wizards, you kind of knew that they weren't going to contend. So now you have a team that you kind of feel like if you're choosing between Russ, LeBron, and Davis, or KD, Harden, and Kyrie. For me, you know, I think that's what we all, if both teams are healthy, that's what it's going to end up being. You know, for me, it's an easy choice to choose Russ and the Lakers and for Russ to get his ring.
I'm going to be vulnerable for a second and confess that I was a diehard Lakers fan when I was a child.
Whoa.
I love Magic. That was the extent of my Lakers.
See, I was 7 years old when the three-peat was happening, you know, 6, 7, 8, somewhere in there when the three-peat was happening with Kobe and Shaq. And so that was my introduction to for sure basketball, but really just like sports as a whole. Like those are the first, you know, those are the first years that I remember watching sports. It's like Kobe, Shaq, Rick Fox, you know, playing against, you know, some of those early 2000s NBA teams. Like that was so much fun. And then whenever Kobe left in like when the Thunder got here and when Kobe left, whenever that was, like the early 2010s or whatever, I sort of stopped following the Lakers because I didn't have any other connection to them. Like Phil was gone. Shaq was obviously long gone. But I they're probably still my second favorite team because I do like LeBron as well. So yeah, I haven't processed the fact that Russ is going to be a Laker yet. That happened on draft night. And so I don't think I've totally processed everything that.
Well, how could you have processed? You were trying to manage a Twitter spaces that had connection issues that were not your fault, and you're juggling a lot. Yeah, how could you possibly
have that? Was that? We I think I talked for like 6 straight hours.
I was actually telling my wife, I was like, yeah, so Spencer managed like 5 hours worth of Twitter spaces today.
And it's all gone. Like, it's all like, we have no, there's no archive. Like, it's all, it's lost to history.
It's probably for the best.
That was a lot of fun. Yeah. Like, we had the first hour, I think, you know, had 100 or 150 people or something like that on there. And it was after we went back on right after the guinea pig, and there were fewer people on there, but we still had, we had callers on, not callers, you know what I mean? Like, people requesting to come on and ask questions or whatever for the entire time, or I would have shut it down much earlier. But yeah, I think we did like an hour and a half before the draft. And then,
yeah.
I think we went until like 10:30 or something, maybe almost like 11 o'clock on draft night. Like, amazing. from like pick six to, you know, 25, something like that. It was a crazy night.
All right. So summer league starts Sunday afternoon. And then I think, to be honest, I don't know the exact schedule, but I think it's about every other day, I would say.
Yeah, I think there's one back to back.
Yeah. I think every team has one.
They're going to be in the championship game too.
Yeah.
I'm calling that now. I don't know. I think Josh Giddey is going to be really, really good. Like, and I think Teo Maledon is going to be awesome. Like, how many thousand, or, you know, how many minutes did he play last year?
A ton.
Like, a ton. 25 minutes a night for 70 games or something like that. Like, I'm not going to do that math on the fly, but, and I also don't know that those numbers are accurate. I just made that up, but
they're going to be good.
I think they're going to be good. Yeah.
Yeah.
And honestly, yeah. Poku would have made them more fun and maybe better, probably better. Yeah, they play August 8th, and then they have 2 days off, and then they play the 11th, day off, 13th, and then, so their back-to-back is the last two games. They play Cade on Sunday. Also, these are all night games, which is kind of a bummer.
I love the afternoon Summer League game.
Like 11 a.m. Summer League game is like,
yes,
I live for that.
Yes,
that's amazing. So yeah, these are all like 7:30, 6, 6, and 5 Central.
So how many games do they play between now and the 12th? Is that two games or three games?
Two.
Okay. So we'll probably record next Thursday. So yeah, we'll have two games to discuss. And maybe, who knows what else in the Thunder world will have happened.
By the way, again, these are all national televised games. Like, just to get back into my pressure cooker conspiracy theory here, three of these games are on ESPN2 and the other one's on NBA TV. Like, the Thunder are going to play four more national TV games in summer league than they will like in the regular season.
That's a great point.
This would have been everyone's chance to see Poku. It would have been the only time anybody talked about Poku for, you know, something on court.
Well, relax. Brandon's got an email. He'll forward it to you. Like, it's he's got the answer. It's fine. All right. We are going to wrap it there. We will talk to you guys next week. We'll have a couple of summer league games to discuss and all sorts of other stuff. Everybody take care. Thanks for listening to the Daily Thunder podcast.
Hey, Hoopheads. We appreciate you listening to this episode of Daily Thunder. Be sure to check out other NBA pods on the Hoopheads Podcast Network, including Cavalier Central, Nuck If You Buck, 305 Culture, Spanning the Spurs, Hashtag Lakers, Motor City Hoops, X's and O's NBA Breakdown, LA Hoops, The Wizards Hoops Analyst, At the Buzzer, and Lakers Fast Break. There are also coaching-focused podcasts, Thrive with Trevor Huffman, Beyond the Ball, the CoachesMaze.com podcast, Players Court, Bleachers and Boards, The Green Light, and Courtside Culture. Oh, and don't forget the network's flagship, the Hoopheads podcast, hosted by Mike Klinzing and Jason Sunkel, and featuring the best minds in the game, from its grassroots to the NBA.